Today is especially through the request of the center's president and the committee's request. Rinpoche is especially giving a talk on how to do Idam practice. So with regard to the public, now this program is not exactly necessary for the general public because and such as in Tibet, the Odin Sangha especially are using this Idam as their special concentration of the practice, and therefore it becomes a necessary talk or necessary thing for them to know, and it's very important for the Odin Sangha in Tibet. Now, however, for individual students here who needs them, these today's talk will also be very important for our practice. Now, as we say, for the general students here, the general students are not exactly concentrated on the Idam deity as their practice. Because we are not possessed of the necessary causes and conditions to actually engage in practice with the three roots, so therefore, in order to fulfill the request as made of the president and the center's committee, His Holiness will be giving a short general introduction and talk about Idam practice. So now Rinpoche is saying in Tibet, the layman in Tibet, now what they practice includes Buddha Amitabha, Avalokiteshvara, Padmasambhava, Grintara, and others. Now there are many such similar practices, and this Tibetan layman will not need to go through the generation and completion stages of the Idam practices. These practices are actually rather complex, and these visualization procedures, their graduated steps and so forth, are actually rather difficult for the general, difficult for the general public, for the layman in Tibet. So, and these general lay students just do Amitabha prayer, Guru Rinpoche prayer, Grintara prayer, Avalokiteshvara practice, praises of 21 Tara, the Heart Mantra, Grintara, etc. This would constitute the main practices of the Tibetan lay people. And so in regard to the number, some of these students can actually reach about a billion of these mantras, or 3 billion, 5 billion of these mantras. So most importantly is that we concentrate on one Idam, and concentrate on that Idam. There's this saying that an Idam relies on one deity and gains accomplishment, but the Tibetan actually relies on 100 and gains accomplishment in none. Now every deity is good, is beneficial, and by relying on this one practice, they can gain accomplishment, but you are concentrating, you are doing too many practices, then it becomes a waste, and because we will not be accomplishing any if we are not actually concentrated for any single one Idam. The disciples, they do not actually practice what we say this generation of completion stages of the deity yoga practice. The reason is because most of these students are actually illiterate. These general lay disciples of Tibet are illiterate, and they are not able to understand or practice these generation completion stages, and because of this lack of literacy, so therefore they simply concentrate on the on Grintara, Cherezi, etc., and accumulates mantra. As most of us here are literate, are educated, or as what they say in China, you're all intellectuals or the educated elite. So you request to do the Idam practice. Now, it's rather logical, and it makes sense that we actually request to do the Idam practice. saying that mainly he's going to teach on the three roots, and which in a Tibetan Vajrayana tradition, now this is the main practice consisting of the three roots, and a very simple introduction. So now within this teaching, now we wish to be liberated from samsara's suffering, ocean of suffering, and to be able to attain unsurpassed enlightenment. We wish to attain the state of Bodhi or enlightenment. So with regard to all these students, disciples, and the firstly, what's important is that we must learn, we must enter the Buddhist way or to become a Buddhist. That's the first step. Therefore, we will need to, through the Buddhist path, to attain the ultimate happiness, ultimate liberation. As they're saying, there was these Baoxian in this god within this sutra requesting. He's saying that all these dharma encompasses all these sutras, and as in order to annotate or to give commentary about the practice on an explanation, an elaboration, a commentary. There are two sections. Now, one it says, one consists of the sutra section that's spoken by the Buddha, and the commentarial tradition is consists of the second section, and why does Buddha Shakyamuni's teaching could actually last in the world for such a long time is because the content are actually enriching, are valuable, and this is an important reason for the long lasting for the Dharma to last long in the world. Within this, we are saying that with regard to the sutra and the commentarial sections, now regard to the sutra sections, and our first primordial Buddha, Samantabhadra, for the sake of liberating all beings within samsara, these beings embroiled in fundamental ignorance actually manifest the primordial Buddha, as we say, we call him. He actually give rise to bodhicitta and attain Buddhahood, and he actually manifests for the sake of liberating from suffering in some all these beings in samsara. He actually manifests what you say this limitless, countless, inconceivable emanations that he actually manifested to liberate all these beings from samsara, so as to bring benefits to all beings in samsara, all these countless beings in samsara, so as to liberate all these beings in samsara. Now, Samantabhadra also manifest the form of Buddha Shakyamuni, the holy form of Buddha Shakyamuni, because out of his compassionate aspirations, he actually manifested the form of Buddha Shakyamuni, and as a result of these, for the sake of liberating all beings, as a result of his initial aspiration he had made, and he actually, Buddha Shakyamuni actually manifested 12 great deeds within his lifespan in order to benefit this limitless number of sentient beings, and finally he actually showed the supreme enlightenment at the holy place in Bodhigaya, and in our world in Jambuvipa, this world as we are known, the Buddha Shakyamuni actually manifested the 12 great deeds in order to liberate these countless sentient beings. When he actually showed this form of attaining Buddhahood, he actually on reliance he actually turned many many wheels of Dharma in which is the common teachings as well as the uncommon teachings. Altogether, the Buddha Shakyamuni actually taught two kinds of Dharma, the common, the uncommon teachings. And if we got to the common teachings now, the Buddha Shakyamuni taught because all these sentient beings, so as to common teachings for beings, sentient beings who are not of very sharp faculties, the Buddha actually taught many of these common teachings for the sake of beings whose faculties are not as sharp at this place, what we call the deer's park or Varanasi. And for the very first time, the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. And this is the time and when the Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths. Which means at Kapilavastu, at this holy place, the Buddha Shakyamuni actually taught the ground of the lotus, and the Buddha Shakyamuni more in-depth teachings, the more profound Dharma. So within after he attained Buddhahood, the Buddha Shakyamuni actually taught Dharma for 49 years, and he actually had three major turnings of the wheel of Dharma, or three major transmission periods when the Dharma was taught. And it's also, it also said that the under encompassed within the three turnings of the Dharma are the Hinayana or Mahayana teachings, and within the Mahayana teachings or teachings of the Great Vehicle now includes the causal vehicle, and the causal vehicle, the vehicle that causes, and that causes, and this is known as the causal teachings or the causal vehicle. Now, following the causal vehicle and or the causal teachings, besides this, is that or the fruit path or the fruition vehicle. And with regard to the causal vehicle, as we all know, it's is what is known as the Sutrayana teachings. The Sutrayana teachings, and the fruition vehicle actually is that of the Vajrayana teachings there. So, and within these, the of the fruition vehicle is the Vajrayana, and this Vajrayana is is known as the Riksum Gompo, or the protector of the three phrases, the Vajrapani, Avalokiteshvara, and Manjushri. This consisting of the protectors of the tribes, or the three tribal Bodhisattvas, or three races Bodhisattvas, and these three Bodhisattvas actually manifest the form of the Virochana or the Adi Buddha, and this Adi Buddha then taught all the Vajrayana teachings. And this is for the sake of benefiting all beings who are of a suitable capacity to learn the Vajrayana teachings, and in front of them they show the form of Adi Buddha and actually transmitted the Mahayana uncommon vehicle, the fruition path of the Vajrayana, the secret teachings, and which actually includes these wisdom, the prajna, or rather includes special methods for achieving the prajna. So this is also what we mentioned earlier with regard to the causal vehicle. Within the causal vehicle, it actually includes what we say, the prajna teachings, or the prajna paramita mother, and with regard to this section dealing with related to wisdom, and these known as the causal vehicle, and with regard to the fruition vehicle, the Vajrayana vehicle, and the Vajrayana vehicle, the secret teachings, when it was being taught at that time, it wasn't really propagated within the human realms, And what's important, what they are saying is that when the Buddha was actually teaching in the heaven of 33, heaven of the 33, teaching to his mother, the Buddha, he turned the Vajrayana vehicle, and later on, when Buddha Shakyamuni gave a prophecy again, saying that when after I've entered Nirvana, about 112 years after my Nirvana, there would actually appear this authentic teacher, who will actually teach the secret teachings of the Vajrayana vehicle, and which is that of the essence of the Buddha's teaching. This person will actually disseminate and propagate that, and in this place of Za, there's a king of Za, and on his palace of this king of Za actually appears with Vajrapani, and they actually receive Shakyamuni's and all the Buddha's blessings. Vajrapani actually manifests on the roof of the palace of the king of Za, and therefore, and for the very first time in the human realm, the Vajrayana teachings were being taught. To what is the Vajrayana practices, and these methods of the Vajrayana were actually included within practices of the three roots. With regard to the three roots, the main practice is the practice of the Guru Yoga practices. So, all these worldly accomplishments, these other worldly accomplishments, all these originate from the Guru or the teacher, and this teacher of the three roots, the root of the teacher, the practice of the root of the practice is most important. So therefore, regardless of whether Hinayana, Mahayana teachings, all the foundation of all these great qualities, the foundation of all these great qualities lies with the Guru. And which means, and reading the awareness holder's text, saying all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and or we're saying the Vajrayana or the Buddhas and Bodhisattva, and the Hinayana, we're talking about the Arahants or the Prayaka Buddhas, all these level stages of accomplishments of all these holy people of Hinayana, Mahayana, or even with regards to the preliminary disciples, the initial learners, in order to gain full accomplishments of merits, all the to internalize all the qualities, all must rely upon the Guru. Therefore, the Guru is actually very important. From this, we can see that the Guru is the most important foundation for all subsequent good qualities to grow and to develop. And and in the sutra teachings, ordinarily, when we are making an example, when we have the time to actually practice all these countless Dharma practices, we are able to learn and practice all these limitless Dharma doors, these countless Idam yogas. Now, it's not equivalent to the merit of an instance of Guru Yoga practice. So therefore, even within the sutra or the commentary, is saying that the one single instance of practice of Guru Yoga practices, the merit and qualities of which exceeds the practice of countless Idams and countless all the Dharma practices. So, and also it was saying that especially within the Vajrayana practice, and every accomplishment, every siddhi or realizations accomplishments must be rely upon the Guru. Now, besides the Guru, there are no other avenues through which we can attain these siddhis or accomplishments. So therefore, if we did not receive the Guru's empowerment or permission, and then we can say that we are it's impossible for us to listen to the Vajrayana teaching. We have no opportunity to get into contact with the Vajrayana teachings at all. So therefore, within the Vajrayana, it's important that first of all we need to receive an empowerment, and it's only after receiving the empowerment that we can continue to practice the Vajrayana, and that is the main crux of the issue here of the teaching at this point. So when after we receive all these initiations or empowerments, and so even though we have already received all these empowerments, and this is not the end of our Dharma practice. Now what it means is that regardless of whether it's a common or the uncommon teachings, now all these peeve instructions, etc., all these need to be, these are sourced from and need to rely upon the Guru. And it's only through the Guru and relying upon them that we can continue to develop our practice. And by relying on the Guru, on the Guru's transmission, without the Guru's transmission, and within Vajrayana, even these of some of the most fundamental sadhanas, we cannot accomplish, or even how to sit properly during meditation. All these basic things are actually sourced from the Guru. And so regardless of whether it's the Vajrayana, if we don't rely properly on the teacher, we actually transgress the root tantric samaya or root tantric commitment. So without the Guru's permission or transmission of this Dharma, then or permission, we cannot simply take this practice and start doing ourselves. Or if we start doing without the Guru's permission, these Vajrayana practices, then we will actually break our commitments, and it's extremely detrimental to our spiritual well-being. And later on, all these realizations or accomplishments from our practice, but without the Guru's permission or authentic lineage's permission. And even if we practice, we will not be able to generate any merits from them. And not just not having the merit, it will also incur very serious negative effects. So all the siddhis and realization in Vajrayana, we are able to receive them. If we can receive them, all these are from the Guru and Guru's blessings, and from the Guru's kindness. And so therefore, all these within the Bodhi Sutra, or say within its or within the commentary traditions of the Vajrayana or the Vajrayana itself, and all these are actually very clearly stating that the Guru is utmost important, is the root of all blessing, the root of all accomplishments, and as well as the root of all activities, or as well as the combination integrated aspect of the three jewels. And you can say it's the three roots themselves, or the three roots can be actually represented solely by through the Guru, and hence therefore the Guru is actually supreme among all sources of refuge. Saying that if we practice the teachings from the Guru now, or rather we practice Guru Yoga, this is equivalent to practicing teachings of all the Buddhas of the three time. There is nothing missing out. Or as we are saying that an Indian will practice one Dharma and gain accomplishment, the Tibetan does 100 practices and accomplishes none. So by relying upon one Dharma, one from the Guru alone, such as practicing on the Guru Yoga, we then will be able to accomplish all the practices from all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And therefore, the Guru, the yoga practice is the root, and is a root practice, and is a supreme, most important. The Buddhas of the three times, the 10 directions, they are integrated, or their quintessential manifested form is that of the Guru. And And through the Guru Yoga practice, and we can gain every realization possible. And as a Buddha, so the three chimes, the integrated form, or the integrated ratio aspect of the five families Buddhas, or the four main directions, the integrated form, the lotus Vajradhara, or we call that. We do the generation and completion practice of Ugin Vajradhara or Dharma, and through this Guru Yoga practice, we will be able to fulfill all these practices and gain every realizations from the Guru Yoga practice. So therefore, the integrated aspect, the source of all blessing, the source of all realization, the source of all activities, the three roots, the three jewels, and the three roots combination, quintessential form is the Guru Yoga, or is the Guru, and is the Guru Yoga practice is a practice that we can do without, is indispensable, especially want to do the Vajrayana three roots. First of all, of the first root that we must do is that the Guru Yoga practice, and is the most important practice we must do. The second root is that of the Idam practice. Now, if we want to give a succinct introduction about it, which means all worldliness and all other worldly realizations are from this, from the point of ultimate truth, of course, and everything is primordially, intrinsically pure without any accepting or rejection of it, and which means is completely transcends any level of acceptance or rejection. So on this level of understanding, we must say is a self-awareness, great equanimity, great expanse of ultimate truth. And on this field, the ultimate truth itself seems to always resides within this stage or level. And however, from truth body and within truth body, and it doesn't moves or shifts or changes, but for the sake of liberating all beings, they're all beings, primordial nature, all the Buddha's primordial nature, regardless of your external aspects, the Mara external aspect, their internal aspect is actually unchangeable, unshakable, immovable, but for the sake of true compassion for all sentient beings, and they manifest inconceivable emanations to this samsara for the liberation of all beings, and under these circumstances, now the Buddhas actually shows all these many forms, and all these beings are actually quite difficult to liberate them, to transform them, and therefore to tame the unruly beings, the Buddhas actually manifest rough respects to in order to liberate beings whom are difficult to tame. So therefore, as we said earlier on, because of all these sentient beings are rather difficult to tame their minds, and but of course there are also many beings who can be tamed through peaceful means, such as within the Mahayana common teachings. Now the Buddhas actually show the forms of Bodhisattva and that they help and to transform beings, but for beings who are rather unruly and difficult to tame, the Buddhas will need to manifest the rough forms, and is a manifestation of their compassion, of course, and even though they show the very rough aspects, in order to liberate all these beings from the ocean of suffering and samsara, in order to help them liberate them, they actually show these most rough aspects. And a guru was actually, Rinpoche was telling a story that in Tibet, the very first monastery of Tibet, the Samye Monastery, King Chisong Desen, was actually constructing Samye Monastery, and wasn't quite successful because of great obstacles, and was built in the daytime, but it was actually deconstructed or actually demolished in the evening time. And because of this consistently happening, Guru Rinpoche, no, the King Chisholm Desen actually asked Guru Rinpoche whether it's because you have no blessing or you are not giving enough blessing or have no merits, and such that the propagation of Dharma in Tibet is being impeded and all the time and thwarted all these efforts. So therefore, King Chisholm was asking, or rather asking the Kimpo Shantarakshita. And Kenpo Chandrakshita say, oh, it's neither of these reasons. It's because I, Kenpo Chandrakshita, I only practice Mahayana common teaching, so I don't have the ability to enact the four activities, magnetizing, etc. So therefore, you, King Chusun Desen, you will need to invite from this area in India, the northeast direction of India, Guru Padmasambhava, to Tibet to help you with your Dharma propagation. And Kintu then asked the Kenpo whether can I really do that? And Kenpo said, well, through our common aspiration, indeed, we'll definitely be able to do so. So when they actually invite Guru Padmasambhava to Tibet, at that time during construction of Samye, now at the area there was this demon king known as Peha, and Peha, this demon king, when he see that Padmasambhava was showing the form of a lama monk, and no matter whatever obstacle that he actually causes, is not able to harm Guru Rinpoche. And so therefore he actually shows a human form and asks Padmasambhava, what are you scared of? And Padmasambhava said, oh, I'm really scared of bad karma. And bad karma in Tibetan means dukpa. And then so and the Peha Gyapo thing, dukparata, which means a scorpion, a poisonous scorpion. So he mistaking Guru Rinpoche's answer that he's scared of scorpions. So this Peha Gyapo, the Peha demon, manifests the form of the great poisonous scorpion to try to harm Padmasambhava. And Padmasambhava, in response, he manifests the Rafu Guru form, who actually hold grabs upon the Peha Gyapo and subdue him. And now Peha becomes one of Tibet's protectors, and now becomes being a disciple of Padmasambhava, pledging to protect Tibet, all the disciples, the Buddhists of Tibet, and not to cause any harm to them. And so he actually became within Vajrayana a protector. So there is this story. And which is why they say, why must Padmasambhava show such a rougher form in a way? It's because he wants to remove these obstacles, or in another way, is in order to tame the unruly beings of the age of this unruly being, and with our great compassion, showing this rougher respect. And so what we sometimes see is rather fearsome. Is also say that why must we do the Idam practice? Another reason is because for the sake of taming all these unruly beings, or these beings who towards ourselves are causing obstacle and during the course of our Dharma practice, and in order to remove these obstacles. But if we do not possess this ability or strength, therefore definitely we must utilize what we say, the Idam practices, in order to rejuvenate ourselves, or to re-energize ourselves, to empower ourselves to accomplish the level of Padmasambhava. So at that time, when actually show Vajrakilaya or the Rafu Guru aspects and all these deities, then you will then be able to make all these beings to tame them. But as an ordinary being ourselves, we have no disability, and so when these obstacles come to harm ourselves, then we will then be unable to actually to do anything against them or stop their harm. But if you do the Idam and gain accomplishments, then we can actually subdue them, and then at the same time we can rely upon them and request and actually exhort them to accomplish whatever activities we want them to do. And as a result of this necessary reason, therefore we engage in the Idam practices. So therefore, you will see that all the Buddha's great compassions manifested form is Chenrezig, and for the sake of the tame unruly beings, Chenrezig actually show wrathful form of the higher Griva, and Buddha Amitabha's wrathful form is actually the wrathful Padmasambhava's form. And or you can say Samantabhadra's wrathful aspect is there. Chimchuk Hiruka, or rather the egret Hiruka form, which is the ruffle form of Samantabhadra, or Yamantaka. Yamantaka is a ruffle form of Samantabhadra, is called Vemigilip. So for the sake of all these sentient beings, they show all these inconceivable forms to benefit all beings, and for the sake of Dharma, the activity of propagation and dissemination, they actually show all these inconceivable forms for the benefit of all beings. Next, the third root is that of the Dakini. Now, Dakini actually means that within the equanimity of Dhammakaya, and actually is a kind of the event of the play of wisdom, play of wisdom, and manifesting in the form of Dakinis, which means that they need to actually accomplish and gain realization from the Buddha's activities. And for this reason, Dhammakaya show the form of Dhammaka of Dakinis, and saying the Guru Rinpoche's consort Yeshe Trogyal actually shows the form of Vajravarahi, or as we on the 25th of the month we're always doing in this center, is that of the Singhamukha, is also a Dakini, and which means or you can say is a primordial source of everything. As we're saying, everything arises from causes and ceases, disintegrates from causes conditions. Now, in order to actually accomplish all these activities, now we must rely upon an auspicious beginning. And so these Dakinis are the auspicious source, and can actually bestow fast, swift accomplishment. And so therefore this is the reason for the importance of the Dakini. So therefore it's saying that regardless of whatever the Edam we are saying earlier on, the Dakini is saying earlier on, in actuality now all these empowerment received the past few days, 100 peaceful Rahu deities and so forth, all these actually rest within our winds, drops and channels of our precious human body. And when they can actually say that our body itself is a supreme mandala, and is a naturally arising, is a intrinsically a primordially the deity, the mandalas. And so by very clearly recognizing these, now we should actually give up what we say is all these. All these adventitious thoughts, when you are free, are a kind of the distractions. And but instead, be serious, be seriously, be engaged in the generation and completion stages practices of the Edam, of the Gura and the Dakini roots, and these three root practices. And through these, we can be very swiftly again within Vajrayana all these accomplishments. And always saying the three samadhis, the causal samadhi, etc. All these three forms of samadhi we can actually gain from the generation stage, and by relying upon this practice, we can be, through practice we can gain the ultimate realization of Vajradhara. So we'll need to seriously practice well the three roots. So this is what the Rinpoche want to give a very succinct and simple teachings on the three root practices. Rinpoche is saying that this will be a simple introduction with regard to today's teachings. Do you have any question? You could actually ask the guru. One question, saying that the Dakini we mentioned about is within the three roots. This Dakini, and we've got means the sky mover, which means a sky mover. The Dakini literally means that, and Dakini of course encompasses the Dakini, and within the Dakini actually includes the heroes and heroines, and Dakinis are not may not necessarily always be female in form. It could actually appear in the form of male, and when it says sky walker, it could be male or female. And regard to for the kosho, the cause of the Dakini, now it means for the beginning, for everything, there is a source, there's an auspicious beginning. So that's what I meant by the cause of Dakini. So now within every Dharma, in order to gain an auspicious beginning, for example, we are saying as a result of the combination of all the auspicious conditions of geography, of human, and so forth, and with all this good coming together of auspiciousness, and we can easily gain accomplishments and or have successful ventures. And so, but with regard to very to bad causes and condition, then we cannot successfully or accomplish matters. Therefore, with regard to the Dakinis, the function of them is to give an auspicious beginning, which means the Dakini for ourselves will be able to create these favorable conditions for ourselves to accomplish our Dharma, accomplish our ventures. So, like the Guru say, if we can actually enter into a pure rhyme, then into pure view, then all the male will become hero, or the female become heroines, or yeah. So therefore, yeah, if we can actually can enter from a pure point of view, but see, most of us have never actually have actually had this had received these practices or practice as such. So therefore, we show the form of samsaric beings, of ordinary samsaric beings. But if we are able to through our Dhamma practice, we can gain these levels. Then we will not. Then we will see ourselves as all hero and heroines, as saying that. But if it's for ex they're saying if your mind is purified, then the environment itself appears as pure. Now whether the externally becomes pure or not, it depends upon our own mind. So that's the main point here. Is it necessary for us to keep our idam secret, not telling people what our idam practice is? And also, if we already have an inauspicious beginning, what should we do to remedy this? Yeah. In actuality, every practice is secret. We can only do it within our hearts, so as to say. And as saying that. Which Idan is Cherezi, is Padmasambhava, etc. And all these practices need not necessarily be kept so secret until no a single soul knows about that. That's really not necessary, but that's only what is traditionally spoken by. And if you actually share it with others what your Idan is, you yourself can know it. And it's not an absolute, both ways are not absolute. And with regard to our Dharma practice, what we are doing is actually we are taming our mind. We are taming our mind, only ourselves will know, and which means that within Vajrayana, and it's actually a practice with concerning ourselves, the individual practitioner. But then, some people say if you let others know what your idam is, you get lots of problem. We don't have to worry about that either, because it's not an absolute to keep it completely secret from others. But very importantly, the guru say what you cannot say is within the course of a Dhamma practice. Now there could be certain signs that comes out, and these signs, you don't boast and tell others that these signs you have this, or how great I've become. Now, what Rinpoche means, or what he implies that if you deliberately actually boast to others of sign, it gives rise to defilements such as pride and say, oh, I think I may have got this attainment or that. And in actuality, now it's, I suppose, been an auspicious condition, but then by our boasting, it becomes an inauspicious sign. So we should actually do it within ourselves and do it properly within ourselves. And Rinpoche is saying that why we don't need to tell others, this reason is the main reason is to avoid this kind of defilement of pride. And about an inauspicious beginning, now during the course of Dharma practice, now for inauspicious beginning, it will not give rise to certain horrible consequences, and we shouldn't be attached to this. But when I say an auspicious beginning, now this again we have to depend on our own efforts. Now, for example, we choose an auspicious date, like we are opening a shop. We start on an auspicious date and so forth, and or when we are doing some practice, a 3-year retreat, then we try to choose an auspicious date to start, so that all the gods and devas you are actually inviting to come to assist in the practice. And then we establish a retreat boundary where there shall not be coming in or exiting of the unauthorized personnel or beings. And so all this auspicious beginning, we need to actually exert ourselves to exert effort in order to have. And so when this causes conditions arises, now through all these even inauspicious conditions, there we can through many rituals such as dispelling obstacles, etc., to actually dispel the inauspicious beginning. The beginning inauspicious, now it could actually also signify that within our own Dharma practice there are some obstacles, and since it is like that, we can actually use many other obstacles to dispel the obstacles, and these will then effectively remedy the inauspicious beginning. But most importantly, ourselves, how we actually see, how we actually view the matter, if we are overly attached to it, so even any minor happening, we will take it, we would actually we take it in the wrong way. So in fact, there is no absolutes. There are no absolutes here. It actually depends upon the level in which we grasp like the matter. Now, there's another answer to a question which was not captured, which means that there's the easiest method to gain rebirth in Amitabha's Pure Land, as long as we practice very sincerely, without distraction, and to think of Buddha Amitabha, make supplication to Buddha Amitabha, and even with in our ordinary way, we can say make prayers to Buddha Amitabha, then Buddha Amitabha himself through his 48 great vows, and through the strength of each of these individual of the 48 great vows, and because all these vows have been realized and accomplished by Buddha Amitabha, so long as we can with very great sincere devotion make prayers to Buddha Amitabha at the time of our death, Buddha Amitabha, relying upon his aspiration, will definitely be here to bring us to be reborn in his pure land. Now, if there are no more questions, the Kempo has some materials which he may actually make some simple introduction to the center members, which means that basically, now what the Guru has already taught, Rinpoche has taught, now basically these materials are rather similar to what Rinpoche has taught, but mainly with regard to Edam, we have heard of many Edam. What is Edam? Now within the Buddhist, the great dictionary of Buddhism, it was saying that Which means the Idam is already primordially, is unchangeably, has always been so, unmoving, unchanging, like the Vajra, which means that, which is actually our Umbuddha nature, our Tathagata Gaba, or which means transcending the ordinary the ordinary stages, where primordially the Idam, primordial nature, so. And this itself is the Idam, and so if there are, as we are seeing here now, for example, the Guru is the Idam, and then we can see that we are the entourage of the Idam, or being disciples of the Guru, and which means and within the Virochana Tantra, you were saying that, and which means that, and ourselves, which means that and it's actually written in Sanskrit, which means there are three different kinds of explanation. The first one is saying that our external nature is saying there are the three kinds or three forms. The first is that we say it's called a gyu. Gyu is the sixth syllable. For example, if we're actually visualizing on Vajrasattva, now at first we must actually dissolve everything into emptiness, and within the state of emptiness arises a home letter, and the home letter the light issues for making offerings to all Buddhas, or the three times, and these Buddhas actually reciprocate with blessings and reabsorb into the home letters. Light again re-emanates to all the thousandfold world, and purify the negative karmas of all beings, and then purify all these environments to the pure lens, and these then truth as purification, and in an instant the sixth syllable itself arises into the Guru Vajrasattva, and that this we call the sixth syllable, and so and then next the first is sixth syllable, second is what you call the seal, and seal we can actually call the hand gesture, or we can say the Vajra, the bell, and so forth, or the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, that they are implements, and all these implements are actually known as seals, or their hand gestures, and these etc. are known as the seal, second type, and the third time is the practitioner. Now, what they're saying is that, for example, if we actually visualize Vajrasattva, we must visualize Vajrasattva in Sambhogakaya respect, and with the 32 major attributes and so forth, all the requisite ornamentations on the body, and etc. So now when we say that the Buddha is 32 major and 80 minor signs, and all these are replete upon the form of upon visualized upon the practitioner. So and yeah, so in the Virochana Tantra they're saying with regard to the Idam, and what they're saying is that in Sanskrit, is expressed in Sanskrit, which Kenpo doesn't really know himself. Now, what he means is that the most precious, the principle, the most important, is that ourselves. Now our own primordial nature is being that of the Idam, and what it means that the main Idam In every four levels of Tantra, there are there are these in Tantra, there are four levels, the Kriya Chaya Yoga and Anuttara Yoga. Now what it means, these four levels of Tantra, these four levels of Tantra, and now in Vajrayana, or each of these levels, there is this universal representation, the Buddha, corresponding to each of these respective levels, and they're seeing within, let's say, some mandala drawings, and each of these. Now, what they are saying is that these drawings represent the mandala. Within this mandala, there are the main deity and these retinues. For example, in the Western Pure Land, it belongs to the Lotus Family. Of the five Fadani Buddha, it belongs to the Lotus Family. And the principal deity is the Buddha Amitabha. And with regard to the eight great Bodhisattvas, each of these countless retinues actually. They all form, combine to form a mandala, which means the principal deity, you know, is retinue and Turaj, and within mandala. So let's say within a mandala, this main idam, and within the deity within a mandala, all these practitioners who actually practice Vajrayana should actually use the principal deity as their main meditation. For to accomplish, we need to rely upon one principal deity, otherwise we will think that we ourselves are the samsaric beings with defilements, ordinary beings of a low level, and this is a usual way of thinking. So now, even though ourselves are primordial nature and non-dual from there of the Buddha, but because of our habitual tendency that the Buddha is so high above and we are of the low level, of a humble position and inferior position, so we will actually need to rely upon the idam to concentrate upon and do meditation of principal deity and as our principal object of meditation. So as we say this idam, we are always saying this idam is not fixed in a way saying that, oh, that is your idam, you need to do it, you can't do others. But of course the great practitioners could tell you that whose idam you can rely upon to gain accomplishments, but because of our except with the exception of the great practitioner, otherwise it's not absolute. Like for me personally, I see the guru, the Padmasambhava, as my guru, as my idam and my protector. So every being, because of the common inclinations of different idams, so when I actually chose this idam and then relying upon this idam, merely relying upon its manifested aspect, we can actually gain non-duality or gain stability in this non-duality of ourselves and the idam, and ourselves as well as all the retinue deities and mandala. Now, on the surface, we can see that they are all different, myriad, but in actuality their nature are the same, are homogeneous. And for example, we say Buddha Amitabha is the main idam as of the mandala, Avalokiteshvara, Vajrapani, and all the countless deities are actually of the same nature, of the same family, the same same lotus family that of Buddha Amitabha. So they are all of the same nature. In a modern language, can say in an actuality they are of one nature that is then manifested in limitless manner from Buddha Amitabha. Now, as you say, when doing Buddha Amitabha, now the practice of Amitabha, now we can actually think that we actually dissolve the Buddha Amitabha into ourselves, and actually to dispel the low, impure perception of ourselves, and then to transcend ourselves to the level of Buddha Amitabha through the course of Amitabha meditation or adoption of Buddha Amitabha as a idam. So therefore, this is the importance here. Now in Vajrayana, regard to the mandala, there are some disputes, which means that there are some disputes within the mandala. Now what it means is that in the mandala, the main idam in the mandala itself is a residential abode of the idams, and is saying that which means that this mandala is the pure land, and since mandala also represents, so when a guru is teaching, giving empowerment, the guru actually invites wisdom deities, and then we can what we visualize is known as the commitment aspect, and what we invite is known as the wisdom aspect, and this being dissolved, non-dual, becoming one, and this is what we meant by whether what we visualize is the mandala, we construct as the mandala, and now being the pure land of the Buddhas, and the main meaning, the mandala is actually in many, many different forms, and actually is a structural manifestation of the Buddha's residential abode and heaven. So, and all these, or rather, it's a congregation, is an assemblage area for the idam and the retinue. So, it's an assistance to the petitioner for visualization of the Buddha in the pure land. And it's a symbolic. It's a symbolic. So now we're saying is an explanation of the nature of mandala. Now what it means is that it helps the practitioner to be able then to accomplish visualization of the Buddha pure land. Now even though we will not be able to completely visualize all the detailed complete elaborated aspect of the pure land, it's most perfected queen essence, and to be able to condense into a single form, which is the mandala. So this is how we will then be able to see the condensed aspect of the pure land, which is a manifested symbolic form for ourselves to be able to visualize in a symbolic, representative manner the pure land of the Buddha. Or if you are doing Guru Padmasambhava practice, then you visualize Padmasambhava's pure land, Amitabha's practice, Amitabha's pure land. Now, and all these mandala is structure, its characteristics, its color and features, and other such details, each of these idam through our sadhana, we can see in a very detailed manner, being very detailed elaborated upon in sutra. So now what it's saying is that in this sutra, which means that visualizing the size of the idam, what should the size of retinue corresponding be, and etc. So generally now these Tibetan artists will need to internalize and master all these details with regard to graphic depiction of these idams and the mandala. So generally now with regard to this sutra are being summarized into a form, and we can say there's a supplementary appendix. Now at this moment, whichever gesture or mudra you need to make at the moment when making offering, what's appropriate to make, and what should the disciples do, what should the Vajra master corresponding do, all these are being summarized within a short paragraph or phrase, and There's this commentarial appendix to it. So, a mandala, there are also three forms, and which is that of the cloth drawn mandala, and such as that we see usually in the tanka. And this cloth drawn mandala actually represents the respective idams, and a cloth drawn mandala first type. The second type is that of the sand color mandala, or the colored sand mandala, which it's actually squarish on the tabletop, and without the creases that come with a cloth drawn mandala, of course, and is actually every detail, aspect, features are being created through a sand color, or through represented through a mantra, rather, through the mantric syllabus, and so this is what, or it can be actually called, or sorry, is that some mandala, the second time is that being put into an amulet form, and the third time is that of the physical three-dimensional representation. Or it can be a small model which you place in a temple. You can make offerings to it, or such as what Kintun Rinpoche has built, the 100 deity in Tibet. So, or it can be constructed through wood, kumat, etc. And these are also viable materials for creation of the mandala. And so. Or we can actually use a vajra, a bell, or the other implements to represent the mini idam within a mandala. These are all possible, and we can actually use certain implements to represent the mini idam, the retinue, and so forth. These are all possible, or even if that is not possible, now we can, as we said earlier on, from the syllable. Can represent the respective idioms and mandala. Now, these this you have to take into account of space constraints, and okay, and the idioms are the peaceful and the wrathful and the semi-peaceful, semi-wrathful deities. These are the three broad categories of idams, and which means the third type means the famous idam, of course, probably can say is Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara, Tara, Amitayus, and the wrathful deities are like Vajrabhairava, Yamantaka, Rafu Guru, Vajrakilaya, Harigriva, Rajapani, etc. All these are representative of the Rafu deities, and about the third kind of deities possessing both peaceful and Rafu features, and these would include things like Guya Samaja, Heruka, Chakasambara, Hevajra, and or Guru Rinpoche himself, and Nansi Zin on subduer of illusion and appearances, and so subduer of the three worlds, and Nansi Zin. So the form of Guru Rinpoche, Nansi Zin on possessing the peaceful, wrathful form. So the features, the eyebrows, the blaze, the anger, and all these we can term as the Rafu deities, and have a crease in between the eyebrow, scowling, but not exactly fully Rafu. And these we need not get into detail about them, but we can recognize just by seeing them. So all these many forms, there are many, many forms. Some are like ordinary human form on face, two arms, two legs, and of course sometimes there can be many faces, many legs, many hands, and all such as Padmasambhava, it's a simple graphical guru form, if you see earlier on, which means it can be one face, two legs, and or, and if you see the or you can see some deities have three faces, six arms, and or it can be 18 arms, nine faces. Now it actually depends on whether it's necessary for ourselves or whether we have the ability to actually practice these idams, these respective idams. We can make a choice accordingly in accordance to our capacity, and if we don't have the time, we can just do the succeeding aspect of the idam. But if for long term, you want to do an elaborate full practice, you can choose the long practice, extensive detailed practice of the idam now. And so with regard, the deity will have now saying that there are two criteria regards the wonderful wisdom deity now, which means that we did not get into detail because we generally don't get into to painting the deity. But if you really want to paint Idam, we can't just haphazardly with through random manner drawing. And for example, there are many comic depictions of the Buddhas, but with regard to the sutras or Tibetan tradition, it seems to be root. And but many artists actually construct just a Buddha's head alone without the body, seeing them simply as artistic collections. But with regards to Buddhists now, these seem to be non-virtuals and non-virtuals inauspicious. In a specious form, like the Buddha himself, you see, generally speaking, now the Buddha's form generally is perfect, and so and we need to be possessed with 32 major 80 minor signs. That the more majestic, the more perfect it appears, the better it is. So if we can actually draw properly, now you should need to draw the Buddha representing the Buddha's bodhicitta, which means that we can draw on, and when you draw, you need in yourself need to have be have bodhicitta, and we can draw these. If you can draw these very well, you can actually bestow liberation, excite through the Dharma joy of seeing it. And so, when having given us the Dharma joy, these will serve the function of the Dharma, and all these features of the Buddha on this body it can be flawlessly depicted, and all these are actually very important. Now, so next, with regard to the nature and the features of the Idam, why in Vajrayana do we have all these many, many detailed deities? Now, the forms, actually, in actuality, they are not exactly limitless. That's because when the Buddha's, the nature of the Buddha's teaching is mainly to actually bring the disciples' mind to be to want to get all beings to keep to the commitments and precepts. What are these representations so limitless, especially in Vajrayana, so many wonderful deities? And now that is not the case either, and because there are many peaceful, there are many wonderful deities, and we must see what disciple has come inclinations to. And what we must stress here is that Kampu Asuntampa, which is the Kato Shedra's professor at the moment, at that time when he went to Chengdu, we actually did ask him, many disciples will also like to do the Idam practice in Vajrayana, but then these disciples generally, they themselves have not gone through the five, four non-dual practices, and So, because the foundation of them is weak, because the conditions are not perfect. So the Idam, the Kinpo at that time, what he says is that for the lay Buddhists, you should not blindly just engage in Raffle deities practice, because the Raffle deities practice rather powerful. And what the Guru was also saying, actually could be used for subduing or for the four. Is mainly engaged in Raffle deities among the four Buddha activities. So now generally we don't have the ability, we don't have the basic criteria condition to and also it's very difficult for ourselves to actually to have these qualities. So we these as a result of not having sufficient condition, we can actually give rise to many obstacles to ourselves, and through its Vajrayana, we could give rise to wrong view, perverted views, and it's negative with regard to the practitioner themselves. So the Kenpo say that with regard to general Buddhist layman, why don't you should actually choose peaceful deity as your Idam, and this would be best. And later, there are many people who ask Kenpo, Chime, and what they should practice. Kenpo always say you should pray to Chimrezig, Guru Rinpoche, Green Tara, Vajrasattva, Manjushri, and there are many of these Idam practices, as we say. So within Vajrayana, there are all these different practices the disciples could do. So here, we need to actually remind everybody. Now, and if the Guru is also saying, now it's not to say you can't do it, the Raffle deities, but if you have the necessary causes, conditions, you've already completed what you need to complete as preliminary, then therefore you can of course do the Raffle deity, but generally speaking, you will need to complete the preliminaries to perfect them first before you continue to engage in the Raffle deities practice to prevent obstacle from arising. Rinpoche is now saying that we should actually this is about it for today's talk. If we go into the theory, will not be helpful to beings. So what's important is that as said earlier on, we can actually take Chenrezig as our Idam in our practice. So all the Buddha's quintessential aspect is represented by Chenrezig. So all the mantras are actually the representative mantra will be the six syllable mantra Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra Chenrezig. And if you actually the quintessential dharma is bodhicitta. So and knowing one understands all. So knowing one understands, you accomplishes all, and these will be Chenrezig, his six syllable mantra. So therefore all of us should actually practice well the meditation of Chenrezig and adopt as our Idam. This will be the best of all Idam for the disciples to utilize and to adopt as their Idam in practice. Rinpoche, the practice of Guru Rinpoche, as we say earlier on, is also the root of all blessings and the root of all realizations, and is the main form of root, the three roots, three jewels, and all the Buddhas combined form. So if you actually do the Padmasambhava practice, it's the same. So regardless of how you practice or what, we should have Idams like this, and from beginning to the end, in a long-term commitment, whatever the Idam that is beneficial for our spiritual growth and our accomplishments, and is extremely helpful, will be these Idams as mentioned. All these are not the criteria should not be whether the deity is good or bad, is big or small, or whether the lama's accomplishment is high or low, or whether the dharma is profound or not. It's not. This is not the criteria for accomplishment, but rather are basing on the individual students themselves. And now what it means is that if we are not practicing properly, then regardless of how good the Buddha and Bodhisattva is, actually all Buddhas and Bodhisattva are actually equal in every respect, but is based on our own mental reflections, our own differentiated thoughts. We actually attribute qualities to respective Buddhas, but as to whether we receive accomplishment, we can actually receive blessings or from the Buddhas, it actually depends on the individual practitioners themselves. So here we should properly practice these, and this is a simple talk on the topic today. Now wishing everyone Tashi Dhamme.